been a great honour for me to be here, and it's very nostalgic for me because it throws back to me so many memories of childhood when I come here, having been in the kingdom before the foundation stone of this building was laid, and the Jewish community. And I came in here and I heard in the shul tick tock, tick tock. And I thought, oh no. And I ran up to the phone, which was in that corner over there, and I just dialed 999 and called the police. And they said, well, you say you're in the building? I said, yes. Well, don't you think you'd better get out of it? And this policeman came in, and he looked around, and suddenly the noise stopped. Very embarrassing it was. You almost wished there was a bomb in the place. And he looked everywhere, and he went down the back, and he saw this big pom-pom hat of the cousin, and he said, what's this? And then suddenly the noise, to my relief, started again. Tick, tock, tick, tock. I said, that's it! And we discovered it was the snow dripping outside. What I want to do in these series of shiurim is to try and use topics which can cater for anybody, and which I find interesting, so I hope others will find interesting. There's this theme that one should always enjoy what one is learning. There's a story told of the Al-Sheikh HaKadosh who was given a drasha in Sfat. He was known as the Darshan. And in that same community was the Arizal, who was the Kabbalist. And once, the Al-Sheikh was in the middle of a drasha, and the Al-Sheikh walked out. And his pupils asked him afterwards, why did you walk out? I mean, it's a bit dishonourable and insulting to walk out of a shiur. And he said, well, the Al-Sheikh was enjoying himself so much in his drasha, it was no longer really Torah Lishma. He was enjoying it too much, and I felt I had to make a protest about it. Well, we should transgress the same way as the Al-Sheikh did and enjoy what we're doing. And there is, in fact, an Egli Tal who writes in the introduction to his Sefer that he criticizes those people who say that when you're learning Torah, you're not meant to enjoy yourself. He says, on the contrary, he says, it becomes your lifeblood. It becomes something which, once you enjoy it, it fights the Yetzara and it progresses the Yetzara, so one should enjoy it. So in trying to find something interesting, I've decided to find some topics which, if I find hopefully interesting, then others will find as well. So I've got here some handouts. I didn't make that many, so you'll have to share one between two. If you could just pass them around. On this idea of enjoying one's learning, there is a halakha on Tisha B'Av. There's a halakha which says that you may not learn the Torah on Tisha B'Av unless it's one of the sad subjects, like the Yirmiyah or something like that. But the essence of that halakha, I find, gives a very striking message. If on Tisha B'Av you're not allowed to learn Torah because you enjoy learning Torah, then surely it must mean that the rest of the year, if you're not enjoying your learning, then it means you're not really learning properly. The only way that you're learning properly is if you're enjoying it. So the best way of enjoying it maybe is to provide bagels with smoked salmon, for starters. I would congratulate everyone for laying on this magnificent breakfast. Applying the oral law sounds a bit of a vague terminology, and the way I wanted to focus it today was looking at the modern lifestyles which we have and to see how it affects the halacha. Not only how it affects it, but can it change it? Now, it could sound like dangerous waters here, because we're not Chas v'Shalom entering the realm of when the Reform come along to say, oh, well, this has changed and that's changed and we'll change everything at our convenience. Chas v'Shalom. What we're saying is that sometimes it could happen that because of modern-day circumstances, it might affect the way that the halacha is determined. For example, if you can travel faster than you did in former times, will it or will it not change the way certain halachas operate? Now, Chazal have a very interesting role, because Chazal were there to interpret what the Torah said, and the Torah left it to Chazal to interpret many things. And without that role that Chazal were playing, the Chumash would be speaking in riddles. It would be very hard to understand the Torah Sheh itself. You need the Torah Sheh al peh, the oral law, in order to give life and continuity to practical everyday living. As Rav Hirsch says, the Torah Sheh b'Ksav are like the notes of the lecture. So you go into a lecture, you hear what is being said, you take your notes, and when you come out of it and you look at those notes, you remember what was said. But somebody else who looks at those notes doesn't really understand what went on in the lecture. So we've got all these riddles like an eye for an eye and so on and so forth. And the Torah Sheh b'Peh puts this continuous flexible life in the way halacha is determined, giving rise to all the shalom shuls and so on. And one of the interesting subjects which I came across was the Korban Pesach. So if you look at the very first page of the handout, you've got the Mishnayos of Pesach. In order that I don't know how to do my time, I'll have to put your watch out. Thank you. Yes, they say that you don't stop when people look at their watches, you stop when they start shaking them. This Mishnah in Pesachim is, well, it's really the Tiferes Yisrael I'm bringing here, which is at the bottom of the page. Because the first Mishnah, I haven't actually produced on this page, the first Mishnah of Perek Tes is somebody who was Tomei or Bederech Rechokov does not bring the Korban Pesach at its appointed time. The rule is, as stated in the Torah, in the Book of Bamidbar, that on the 14th of Nisan, we bring the Korban Pesach. But if somebody was Tomei, he can bring it Pesach Sheni, a month later. Derech Rechokah means if he was not on the way. What does it mean if he was not on the way? Chazal determined that the time it takes for a person to walk at a casual pace from 6 o'clock in the morning on Erev Pesach to 12 noon, that will enable him to bring the Korban Pesach in Yerushalayim. And they determined that that would be from a place called Modi'in, which is 15 kilometers, about 8 miles, from Yerushalayim. And they said, if you are within that radius of Yerushalayim, you have to bring the Korban Pesach. If you're outside that radius, you're called Bederech Rechokah, you're far away. So the question which is obvious is that when we start bringing Korban Pesach again in Yerushalayim, the Inher of Yomeinu, will that law change? Because you can have a car, you'll have an Eged bus, which will get you to Yerushalayim from outside that radius within those 6 hours. Indeed, within those 6 hours, you'll be able to take a flight from London to get to Yerushalayim, possibly. Yeah. Will then the law change to encompass a larger radius to bring you to Yerushalayim, to bring the Korban Pesach at its appointed time? So if you look at the Tiferes Yisrael, Hilchus HaGevurta, so that's the square writing at the bottom. If you look about 7 lines down, 6 lines down, Oshayah Oz Bederech Rechokah, if he's on a far away, Shehayah Beino Bein Chomas Yishalayim Teslam Mil, if he's within 50 mil, Oseb Aliyas HaShemesh Diyom Yudalad, that's the day of the 14th. He can't reach Jerusalem. So after the day of Shkitas HaPesach, Shehalech Baraglov Benachas, that he's walking there simply. And then he writes in brackets, B'chushenis Kelasos HaPesach Yitz Hashem Bizmanim. Please God, when we will make the Korban Pesach again in our time, Shemtziyat Achbolo Lahalech B'mehiros, where we can go by public transport more quickly, Alidei Shvilei Barzel. And he's talking there about the Eisenbahn, which are the trains which have come out, the Yerushalayim Eisenbahn, and then we will have trains in Yerushalayim. Ozi, yeah, did there a chokah mishuna? then surely the din of Derech Rechoka will change, with Marsha Kavata Mishnah, to what the Mishnah has fixed. Al Pi Beis Din Gadol Shi'az Yusha Hashem Yushalayim Mehem Yameinu, then the Beis Din will be able to change the rule, and then we will be able to bring God Pesach for those people that are even outside Yishuv. But as soon as he's written that, he changes his mind. Look at the very last line of the page, where there's an asterisk. Atoh Hodaranabi. I now go back on what I've said. Mipnation is currency, the Gemara of Pesachim. I now remember the Gemara of Pesachim. The person is outside the radius, far off from Modim. The Yachal Kanish Besusim of Prodim, and he's got horses or other animals, fast animals. Yachal Yehichai, I might think that he's Chayav, Talmud Lama, therefore it says, but he's not on the death. If he's got a fast horse, and he can get to Yerushalayim from Tel Aviv. So what is he now saying? No, the Derech was defined as from Odin, and that's it. And even if you've got the fast horse, Chazal made a definition, and that definition sticks. So what he's saying is that even with your fast egg bus, or even with a plane, if you are outside Yerushalayim, it won't make any difference. The decision of Chazal, which was made at that time, is the same. So he says the law will not change. And what I want to do is look at some other halachas to see whether the law will change with those as well, whether they will or whether they won't. So in that respect, I want to go on to the Rambam in Hilchas Shechita. On the next page. And here, I'm not talking about technology, but I'm talking about medicine, or modern medicine. The din of a trefa is an animal which will die within 12 months. One may not eat a trefa, and one can have benefit from it, one can sell it to a goy. So the definition of a trefa is, you'll die within 12 months, you can't have it. Ah, what if you can treat it with medicine? Then you will make it a cull, and then it won't die within 12 months. And we're not only talking about the modern medicine of the 21st century. The Rambam himself was a doctor. Let's see what he says in Sif Yud Gimel, Halacha Yud Gimel. This is after a long list of different categories of trefa. The Omru Shehen Trefa, and these are the rules of trefa. Afal Pi Sheyira B'Dalkei HaRefuah, even though with the ways of medicine, Shebi Odeinu, which we have in our hands, Shemiksosim Einon Mamisim, some of these animals will not die within 12 months. The Esh Ashatichya Behem, and they will survive. Einucha Ramasha Monu Chachomim. We only have what the Chachomim taught us, Sheneema, as it said, Al Pi HaTorah Sheyarucha, according to the law which they teach. So the Rambam is saying, even if with medicine you can cure a trefa, it's still called a trefa. That medicine which you apply will not change it. The Chazanish writes on this, and I didn't get the chance to photocopy the piece that he writes. The Chazanish writes a very interesting piece which is unfortunately obscure to find, and it took me a long time after I had heard about it to find it. But he writes about this Rambam, and he says something which is very fundamental. He says that there are the various refuos. He says, when God created the world, he created the refuos, but we didn't always know what they were. He says, at the time of Chizkiah, there were 60 refuos, which were afterwards many of us forgotten about. They were hidden, and they could cure straight away. But they were not revealed every time. Some generations you have refuos, sometimes they're forgotten. The refuos that we have now are not the same as then. Or not only with animals, but with human beings. Some refuos do apply for some kinds of people in certain climates, in certain countries, and they don't apply to others. So it goes up and down. But the Nimsalak Achomim, the Kroha Trefas, but it was left by the Torah to the Chazal to determine what is a trefa. Al Pi Ruach Kodesh, according to their Ruach HaKodesh, which they then decided, and what they then decided was left to be for all time, the Doros, for all generations. And we don't have any new Torah after them. So according to their Hashgacha, Bizmanu, at that time, that was the definition of the Trefa, and that's the way it stays. And he says, and that is the fact that God gave the Torah. God gave the time to Chazal to interpret, and it was left at that.
and it wouldn't change anymore after that. And so what he's saying is that when the Torah was given at Sinai, God was saying the various definitions will be left to Chazal to determine at their time, according to their Chochmah, and that's the way it will be. I mean, this is phenomenal. We know already that there are things which we determine, Kiddush HaChodesh, shall we say, that it's the Zamanim which affects Yom Kippur, and we determine it. But more than that, Chazal are actually defining according to their wishes what the Torah is saying. So that's a principle which is quite far-reaching. And we see this, therefore, with the Din of Treifa, and that also explains our Korban Pesach. They determined what Derech is, and that's the way it stands. Let's now move on. So we've got a variety of different subjects. And this is the Dinim about building the Beis HaMikdash. The question which I'm posing is, when we build the Beis HaMikdash, it's obvious that there will be pressures to put into the Beis HaMikdash various electrical appliances. Not just the lighting and the heating to make it more cosy for everybody, especially the Kohanim who have to work under various conditions, but the large numbers of members of the public, or Kohanim, who are coming to bring Korbanos. You're going to have queues outside. How are you going to? Ideally, it would be nice if you can have some loudspeakers to call the intercom systems to bring people in. But people will say, well, why can't we do all this here? And the question is, will there be in the Beis HaMikdash the same architecture and design as was originally? Or will there be these additional features which we can use with technology, with light and heating and intercoms and speakers and goodness knows what else? So if you look at the Rambam in Hilchos Beis HaMikdash, down towards the bottom of the page, Avnei Hecha, V'Azoros, any of the stones, which the bricks which are used, Shenifgemu, Oshenigmu, anything which is damaged or dented, Pesulim, they will be possible, Ve'Eino Pidyon, Ela Nignozim. Kol Eben Shenoga Bo HaBarzel, any stone which steel has touched, Avo Vishlonifgemu, Pesulah, it will be possible, the Binyan HaMizbeach, Binyan HaKevesh, Shnema Kichabu, Chayinafu, Eleva, Tchaleleha. The thrust of what the Rambam says in the rules of building the Beis HaMikdash is that you may not change anything to the structure. Nothing may be done to get the plumbers coming in and starting to knock holes in walls and cementing over it and putting wires in with all this junk boxing and all this kind of thing which the electricians use. Anything like that will be completely out of order. It will not be allowed. But having discussed this with my rebbein when I was in Eretz Yisrael, the view was taken that it will be possible to have electrical appliances in the Beis HaMikdash which do not affect the structure. So you could have standing lamps which are run by batteries. There could be a speaker system outside to call people in. But none of this may be done in such a way which will affect the structure. The rules will remain the same, but technology can make some inroads to the Beis HaMikdash with those constraints. Another idea of how to understand the modern day Beis HaMikdash, which we should have soon, speedily, in our time. I now come to another question, which is the way of modern technology, and that is not just for when the Beis HaMikdash is back, it can even apply to now. And the question is that there are certain rules relating to agriculture which seem to be somewhat neglected nowadays. Alright, we're not all farmers, but the farmer has to reserve a corner of his field for the poor, payoff. There are also rules called leket and shikha that any produce which is dropped or forgotten, left behind, go to the poor people. And even amongst the people who are observant, it's not common to see nowadays a corner of the field reserved for the poor people. Why is that? Is there something which has made that change? Is it something to do with modern day life that poor people just can't be bothered to go out and to cut the corner of the field, no threshing it, and grinding it, and sifting it, and baking it, for all the bother entailed in baking a loaf of bread? And when I asked this question, I was pointed to the Chazon Ish in Hilchos Maaseros. It's perhaps called the division of labour. In former times, it was a normal thing for everybody to go and pick in the field, and you go home and grind it and do all these bothering things. And so the poor people did the same. So Chazanish writes, if you look at the left-hand column, the second full paragraph, which starts with the word Uva Ikka. Uva Ikka dim leket shikha v'peya, l'didom. So that's shinvav peya, shikha v'peya. Adai lo nishtana. He refers to the Ramon, the Shulchan Aruch, which is in Yeredeil, which there also refers to the idea that we don't find Leket Shikha Peah so well observed nowadays. The Kefi Roz Einenu Lo Yachriach Shum Oni Leilech. Because according to the way we see things, poor people don't bother going Basodeh in the field, Lilkot, Matnasaniyim is that abbreviation. To gather what's due for them. Shtochi Yosel Sechorah. For the poor person to go into a field and start cutting and this weather and all the grinding and everything, it's much easier for him to put on a hat and a coat and to come into North Head and Adas on a Sunday morning and shake his hand with some coins in it and say, Tizkan HaMitzvah, and off he goes and buys a loaf of bread in Kujinski without all the bother of having to go and do all this grinding and threshing and so on. Nowadays the bread is cheap and easily found. And really the poor people nowadays have other needs. The dirah, finding a home, a kavisai, godim, and their clothing, the etzah srochim, council tax. And it's very unusual to find that a poor person will be just begging for a loaf of bread, which you can buy for a pound at the local baker shop. The Kolshkein Shnei Ashiach Likza Peah, and all the more so he won't go and cut the Peah, the Lord Dush, the Thresh, the Tchon, and to grind, the Lapos, and to bake. The Lord Rovim, and the Palestinians will turn up instead, the Yil Katum Shehem, they will go and cut your Peah. And, you know, why do we have to bother? Put the Chemoshim, the Lakhtim, the Sassovim, the Eitz, but Ori Yisrael, just like already now you see the Arabs chopping other things from us, cutting bits of grass and herbs and other things in the Jewish areas. And if we leave it, even if the Jews would keep this, is it kedai for the poor person to go to all that bother? And so he says that is why to be melamed zechus on Klal Yisrael who are not observing leket shikhan peah. Although in the way he ends off his paragraph, it's implied that he's suggesting that these precepts should still remain and should still be kept, or at least one is poder. If one keeps a corner filling, it's not picked, then one takes the value of it and gives that amount to tzedakah. So we see also here that already at the time of the Ramah and the Chazanish, you found that with the way agriculture works, with technology, a change in the halacha. So this does contrast with our earlier examples of carbon patient, the basically posh, and modern medicine, where the rules are changing. But it's not that the intrinsic din of leket shikha peah is done away with. It's that the din is still there. But the purpose of it, the people who are meant to come and make use of it, are not turning up. So maybe you can steer your tzedakah in better ways to help these poor people, rather than making them go through all this tircha of having to cut the corn in the field. That's right. You want to buy an adult in the Jerusalem house or in Ma'ariv. I want to announce that the payout is taking place at my field, and you're welcome to come and take it. And you'll see what happens.
Would the field be there anyway, whether or not the full come?
Well. Are reserving their leket shikha peah for the poor, and only the Arabs come, and no Jews come, then you could be benefiting the Jewish poor much more by giving them the money instead. But if, on the other hand, no Jews are turning up, then he is being melamed zechus, you could say, of giving some justification to people for not actually fulfilling the mitzvah saseh.
What's his conclusion?
Well, he leaves it at that, though his final words...
You don't have to be paranoid?
he is explaining why people are not performing the mitzvah. It is a mitzvah saseh. If you look at his last words of that paragraph, he says, "Avol gamza eino mukhra," but that's not decisive. Im minhogam shelo kedim, if the way people are practicing is not according to the din. So he's implying there that people should still be keeping their leket shikon. But in a way, he's trying to provide a reason why people have not been bothering, and that falls in line with the Rambam in the shikon. Right, the next page I come to is a Mishnah in Gemara Tanis. Halfway down the page, there's a Mishnah, Begimel Begimacheshran Sholem Isakashomim. We got that. Oh, sorry, Rosh Hashanah. All right, we'll do Rosh Hashanah first. Two thirds down the page, Mishnah, Bereshon, Mahoy, Masi, and Masuos. To keep Rosh Chodesh properly, we should go al P-R-E-L, according to Saitik. Nowadays we do it by Cheshbon, but in the future we'll be doing it again according to Saitik. And you can break Shabbos in order to report to the Bez Din if you saw the new moon. But the Shaluchim, they did not break Shabbos, but they had to go out and send messages to everybody that it's Rosh Chodesh. And in former times, before the Shaluchim went out, they simply passed the message on by lighting bonfires. At first they lit bonfires with Shakuk and Akusim, but the Karaites came along and tried to spoil our ways of organizing Rosh Chodesh. They made a takana that messengers go out on horseback in order to spread the word of Rosh Chodesh. And then it describes the various places on how on the mountain hilltops they could light bonfires, and that spread the word around very quickly. And when the messengers went out, it took much longer, of course, and hence with Yom Tov Sheni, and we don't get too much bogged down with ideas today of Yom Tov Sheni. But the reason of keeping second day started because it took a long time for everybody to find out when Yom Tov was. It took up to 14, 15 days to send out the messengers to the furthest points. And in fact, we're going to come across this in the next piece on Tanis. It took a couple of weeks, and therefore it affected the way in which we would keep Yom Tov Sheni. Now, nowadays we keep Yom Tov Sheni for a different reason, says the Rambam. It's really because of Pesach, with mistakes could be made in Golos, we might make Rosh Chodesh Molei Choseh, Choseh Molei, and so the tradition of Minhag HaVoseinu B'Yodeinu carries on as a very firm din d'Rabbanon, Minhag HaVoseinu B'Yodeinu. But in the future, what will be the din? Because we won't need the Shaluchim to go out on horseback, or will we? Is it possible in the future to send out a message from the Beis Din in Yerushalayim by fax, by email, to tell everybody that the Beis Din have confirmed that it's Rosh Chodesh? Can we assume that it will be a reliable email and that the Kusim will not be doing anything to affect it, and they might have infiltrated any passwords or codes? Or will a fax be good enough to determine that it is Rosh Chodesh? We can assume that there will be some electronic method which will be reliable for everybody to say that this is an authentic message from the Beis Din. And therefore, will the law change in the future to minimise the possibility of having Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golias? Well, we should be in Eretz Yisrael anyway, and in Eretz Yisrael anyway we keep Yom Tov only one day, but on Rosh Hashanah you keep 2 days. And why did we keep 2 days? Because if they determined that it was Rosh Chodesh on Rosh Hashanah, there was a doubt amongst the outer communities whether it was in fact Rosh Hashanah, so Rosh Hashanah was kept for a second day. So you can't send out an email or a fax on Rosh Hashanah to tell everybody, because although you break Shabbos or Yom Tov to report witnessing the new moon, you can't break Shabbos or Yom Tov to send around word that you've confirmed that it's Rosh Chodesh, which means that Yom Tov Sheni will still apply in respect of Rosh Hashanah in many instances. But we can suggest that in future, if you are in Chutz Laaretz, there will not be a need for Yom Tov Sheni to occur for Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. if the word gets around in time. Well, that will also determine on whether the Beis Din Yerushalayim will say whether there will be a need for Minhag Avos Seinu B'Yodeinu for some other reason. Because the reason why we keep Yom Tov Sheni nowadays is not really for the same reason as then. The reason why we kept it then was because there was a doubt whether it was Yom Tov. Nowadays there is no doubt whether it's Yom Tov. We have a Din D'Rabbanon of the problems of Molei Choseh Choseh Molei. And if they determine in the future that such a problem might still exist in Chutz Laretz, then it will be for the Beis Din to say that you will carry on keeping a second day Yom Tov in Chutz Laretz. So that in a way is speculative. But we can reflect on the fact that within Eretz Yisrael proper, there will be less need for Yom Tov Sheni in the future because the messages will come out more quickly to determine when Rosh Chodesh has been. Next page is from Tanis. This is the din of the Saint Halumotor. Now we here in England and other places in Chutz Laretz start the Saint Halumotor 60 days after the autumn equinox. So it's based on the solar calendar, which is on the 4th or the 5th of December. In Eretz Yisrael, though, they start saying the Saint Halumotor much earlier. Why? Because they need the rain much more, and so the prayer for it is meant to start straight after Sukkot. But it doesn't start straight after Sukkot. Look at the Mishnah, halfway down the page, B'gimel Macheshvan, Sholim Asagah Shomim, we ask for Geshem, the Saint Halumotor, Raman Gamliel Omer, but we go according to Raman Gamliel, who says, B'Shivabo, we go on the 7th of Macheshvan, which is Tesvav Yom Achar Chag, 15 days after Sukkot, Kedei, in order that Shiagia Achron should be Yisrael and Mahar Peros. So those who have travelled to Israel for Ola L'Regel, they need to get home, and some of them have a 2-week journey to the farthermost corners of Eretz Yisrael, such as the River Euphrates, and that therefore takes them 2 weeks, and we don't want to ask for rain while people are still on a journey. It's not fair on them. So we will wait till they get home, and then we will ask for the rain. Well, even if the Eged buses are on strike or very slow, it's hard to imagine in the future that it will take you 2 weeks to get home from your own and a regular life. It's imperative to say that you will be able to get home within a day or two from Yerushalayim to the farthermost corner of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, the question is, will the din change of the Saint Halumotor? Having discussed this as Marubayim as well, it would seem that the Beis Din Yerushalayim will be empowered to make a takana that the Saint Halumotor will start almost immediately after Sukkot, probably a couple of days afterwards. Because the reason for this din d'rabbanon, it's not a daraisa, the reason for this din d'rabbanon is to allow people to have time to get home. Since people will get home more quickly with their fast mode of transport, then we can say that the Saint Halumotor will be started earlier, particularly the fact that rain is needed so much in Eretz Yisrael, even in our modern time of technology. I don't want to deal too much with the last thing on my list, which is Tefillah, Kedei Lechmil, but this is something which is also nowadays. If you have a fast car, you can get to a shul more quickly. There is a din that if you are within a mil's journey, 18 minutes, to davening Tefillah B'Tzibur, then you have to go to a shul. There's also, if you're on a journey and you have to go back, so it's Kedei Hill of Dalladville, which is 4 kilometres, which would be about 72 minutes. Mm. So the question is it the time it takes you to walk 18 or 72 minutes, or is it the time it takes you to drive 72 minutes or whatever? Now, the wording used... I didn't hear you.
I said there's a traffic jam.
Oh, yeah.
You can get further in walking than in driving.
That's right. But if it says Kedei Hill of Mil, it doesn't say 18 minutes for walking. It says Kedei Lechmil means your journey time of 18 minutes. So the implication is that if you can get to shul in your car within 18 minutes, then you have to be at shul with your car. If you don't have a car and you can only walk to shul, then again, if it takes you up to 18 minutes to get to shul by walking, then the Kedei Lechmil goes according to your walking. But the word Kedei implies, however you manage to get to shul, it's your 18 minutes. And that is your duty of Tefillah B'Tzibur. So again, technology plays a role there, but it doesn't really change the law at all. So if we go back on all our topics, we're not changing any laws. We're not changing any halachos. Well, we explained that with Korban Pesach and medicine and the Beis Hamikdash, definitely the laws don't change. With Leket Shit...
Yes?
Well, we could say that the question answers the original question, because if they would have said 18 minutes, then we might have said just walking 18 minutes, and if you can drive faster like with Korban Pesach, you don't have to. But whereas it says Kedei Hiluch Mil, it was the nature of Chazal to say the rules in the way of, especially if they didn't have clocks easily, the time it would normally take for you to travel a mil. So they use this as a barometer, and it's very common in halacha. Well, pashtus hiluch is walk. Yeah. The time it takes you to walk a mil is 18 minutes. But that time it takes you then is what determines. Right, because it says kedei, it doesn't say hiluch mil. Whereas with Korban Pesach, it didn't say kedei hiluch 15 mil. It said 15 mil. So because it didn't say kedei, that was the definition. But because they said kedei, they made it flexible. So that if you've got a horse, then your kedei does change. So they made it flexible with that terminology. I do see someone shaking their head.
No, come on, equate the two in Pesachim. 40, the man walks, it takes his son, that's how we work out all the time.
It takes him, right, walking from Modi into Jerusalem.
The day, 12-hour day is made up, is a 12-hour day is 10 passes, which is 40 now. And the son takes that time, and that's how we learn out all our times.
That's right, but nevertheless, with travelling time for Tefillah, we're not fixing it if you have a car. So if you're driving a car and we say Kedei Hiluch Mil, then you are within those 80 minutes obliged to try and get to shul if you are within that time still.
You see, a mil, the definition of a mil is a distance you can travel in 18 minutes.
Yeah.
It's 18 minutes, which is the second part of the definition here.
Yeah.
Not the mil.
Whereas with the Korban Pesach, it was the 15 mil. But here it's the hiluch, which is the journey time. Correct. So if we look back on all our topics, Torah is infinite, but Torah is permanent, and Torah doesn't change. We haven't really changed any laws. Where technology affects the halacha, it's that it's intrinsically in the original takana of Chazal, that if circumstances are such that you can achieve something different, then that will be accommodated within the original takana. But Torah doesn't otherwise change. Torah is, as we've shown with the way Chazal operate it, al pi haTorah sheYerucha. And that is why, when Chazal operate the way they do, we give so much weight to what they did, that it is as if they are giving us the Torah from Sinai. There is a minhag, I'll finish off with this idea, there is a minhag on Simchas Torah, where we do the Havdalah on the Sefer Torah, to cross our arms, and to do it the other way round, or to do the Sefer Torah the other way round. It does need somebody strong with lots of muscles to do it. And one can ask, why is it that we do this on Simchas Torah? Well, David Nieto, who writes the Kuzari HaShemi, he was the Sfardi chief rabbi of London in the year 1700, he offers a reason for this minhag. He says, on Simchas Torah we're celebrating the completion of reading the Torah Shebitzah, the written law. But we are reminding ourselves that not only do we have to learn the written law, but we also have to learn the oral law. And in the oral law, it says, Al pi haTorah asher yiruach, according to the law which they teach you, and lo sasu min hadavar asher yagidu lecha yamin u'shmal. Don't turn away from what they say to you, to the right or to the left, And Rashi says there that even if they say to you that right is left and left is right, you should still listen to what the rabbis tell you. So because it says you should even listen to them if right is left and left is right, we remember that on Simchas Torah by putting our right hand on the left hand part and the left hand on the right part to do the Hagbah of Sefer Torah, to remind ourselves about the importance of Torah Shabbat. Thank you for listening to me so patiently.